Well, good morning. It's great to see you guys here. I join with Ryan in saying welcome. We're glad that you're here. My name's Brent Clark. I'm the lead pastor here, and we are always excited when you join us on Sunday morning. We think God uses these moments to teach and motivate us and move us closer to Him, and I hope you have that same experience when you're here as well. If you've been here any time over the last few weeks, you know that we're in a series where we've called Unexpected. And today we're going to wrap up this series. But over the last 4 weeks, we've spent some time talking about the moment when Jesus was resurrected from the dead. So we did that on Easter Sunday. And then we've been looking at these moments, these encounters, these experiences people had from that moment going forward. And that first week, we looked at how when Jesus, in that moment of the resurrection and that first Easter morning, there was this unexpected message which brought to us unexpected life, that the same power that raised Jesus from the dead is the same power that you and I can experience and be risen as well spiritually from death to life. The second week, we kind of looked at something a little more difficult and challenging when we looked at the unexpected doubt that sometimes many of us come across, the doubt that kind of can be in our minds and cause us to stumble a little bit and maybe cause us to doubt our faith and doubt our relationship with God. And we looked at the apostles to see even them, especially Thomas, were doubting at that moment in history when the resurrection had occurred. But even through that unexpected doubt, we saw that there can be an unexpected faith that comes out on the other side. And then last week, we talked a little bit about these unexpected encounters, how there were two people on the road to Emmaus, and Jesus was with them, and they didn't even realize it until the very end, and how you and I, even today, continue to have these unexpected encounters, and that hopefully our eyes will be open, and we will be able to see and take notice of when those unexpected encounters with Jesus take place in our lives. And today, what I want us to look at into wrapping this series up is probably, Ryan said last week's message was his favorite because it pointed to the Old Testament. I'll tell you, this one is my favorite because I find myself right in the middle of this story. I find Brent right there where Jesus is talking to Peter. And we're going to talk today about what happens when we blow it. Now, I'm sure that that doesn't happen to any of you. I know that that never happens to you. You never have a moment in life where you screw up so bad that you just want to go hide. So what we're going to do, we'll agree this morning from the beginning. We'll talk about your friend, okay? That person that you know. I mean, we all have that friend, right? That friend. So that's who we'll deal with this morning, is that friend that we have that comes to mind. But we're going to look at these moments where we mess up so badly that it can even shake us to our core. And we wonder, can we ever get past this moment? Can we ever move beyond this? And not only that, we wonder if God can or will ever forgive us, or if He will be at this moment so fed up with us that He just tosses us aside and says, I'm done messing with you. I've given you all the chances I'm going to give you. I'm moving on to someone else. Is that how God deals with us? And we wonder, will we have to live our entire lives, the rest of our lives, under this dark cloud of failure? And there's probably no better example that we see of how Jesus responds to us in these moments of failure than we find in the last of John's Gospel, John chapter 21, where we look at how Jesus responds to one of His disciples, not just one of His disciples, one that was considered to be in His inner three, that was really tight with Jesus, one of Jesus' closest friends. We're going to look today at how Jesus responds to Peter. At the end of John's Gospel, we do find this story. And it begins like this. And if you want to look it up, you can. I'm not going to read it to you. I'm just going to tell you the story because I love to talk to tell stories. But we find that this is the third time that Jesus has appeared to the disciples. We read that there are seven of them there. And the story begins with the disciples. They're near the Sea of Tiberias, which is the Sea of Galilee. And they're there. And they're there because Jesus has said, hey, I want you to go there and I want you to wait for me. I'll meet you there. And so there they are and they're waiting. And as they're waiting, Peter just kind of looks at the other guys and he says, hey, you know what, guys? I'm going to go fishing. Nothing better to do, I guess. I'll just go fishing. Think about it. Sounds like a good way to pass the time, right? Rather than just sit on the seashore and just wait. And the other guys think about it and they go, hey, wait up. We'll go with you too. And so they all get in the boats and they go out. And you remember that most of these guys, or many of these guys, were fishermen by trade before they had left their trade, before they'd left their job, before they dropped their nets and followed Jesus. These guys were fishermen. And we don't know why they want to go fishing this day. We don't know exactly, was it just to pass the time or nothing else going on? Or we don't know possibly if Peter had something else in mind when he made this decision to go fishing. You see, you have to remember what state of mind Peter would be in at this point. Yes, he had seen Jesus once already, but the only information we have about this encounter is that Jesus basically says, "I am he," and he opens their mind to Scripture and they believe. But we don't see that anything else has been really resolved or taken care of. So I imagine at this moment in time, Peter's words are still fresh in his mind. Those words of denial had to be playing over and over in his mind. And I wouldn't be surprised if in this moment he thought, you know, I really screwed up big time. I did worse than anybody else. They just deserted. I deserted and denied. I was cussing at people, telling them I didn't know who Jesus was. This is big. And you know what? Maybe I'm done. There's no way I could ever get past this. There's no way that I could ever be of any use to Jesus again. In fact, you know what? Everybody knows what I've done. Everybody knows how big of a screw-up I am. Everybody knows what a huge failure I am. No one will ever listen to me. No one will ever take what I say about Jesus seriously again. You know what? Maybe I should just quit. Maybe I should just go back to doing what I did before. Because at least there the fish don't know. And the fish don't judge. And the fish don't look down their nose at me. And they don't point and sneer. Maybe I should just leave this Jesus thing behind. You know, for me personally, Brent, I understand if Peter felt that way. In fact, as I think about probably what was going through Peter's mind and his emotions, I understand it completely if that's what he thought. We don't know exactly why they did it, but Peter says, you know what, I'm going fishing. And the guys get in the boats and they head offshore. They didn't go out very far, about 100 yards. And we read that they fished all night. They continually threw the nets and they continually brought up nothing. Which is kind of surprising because these guys were professionals by trade. They weren't novices. It wouldn't be like me going out fishing. I wouldn't have a clue how to do it to start with. But these guys, this is how they made their living. This is how they got their money. They knew where the fish were and how to catch them and how to make this happen. But tonight, for some reason tonight, would prove to be nothing but a frustration for them. And after all night on the water, they had caught absolutely nothing. Not a single fish. After Peter's previous failure, I can imagine something like this going, you know what? I can't serve Jesus right, and now I can't even fish right. I'm just nothing but a big loser. I'm nothing but a huge failure. I can't do anything right. What good is it? What good am I? I might as well just give up. The story goes on, and we hear that early in the morning, there's a voice that calls out from the shore. And this voice says, "Hey friends, have you caught anything?" Imagine that reply. "No! You think we'd still be out here if we caught anything? Thanks for reminding us." And the voice calls out and says, "Well, why don't you try tossing your nets to the other side of the boat? You'll find some fish there." Now, if you're one of the disciples in the boat, especially Peter, this moment right here has a very familiar ring to it. In fact, in Luke's gospel in chapter 5, we see a very similar story that took place at the beginning of Jesus' ministry. When he called Peter to follow him, Peter had a night of futile fishing just like this. It was like deja vu all over again, right? Working hard all night for nothing, and then Jesus said to him, "Try again." And they caught so many fish back then that they couldn't even carry them all in. They needed help lifting the nets into the boat. So when Peter hears this voice from the shore, and some of the other disciples hear the voice from the shore, there's a very familiar ring to it. We've been here before. And I'm sure they thought, well, it worked once. Maybe we'll try it again. And so they did exactly that. They tossed the net to the other side. And what we read about is that the nets became full, very full. At that moment, John, another one of the disciples, puts it together. And he goes, that's Jesus. That is our Lord. That's Him. Well, Peter, always shooting off at the mouth and being very impetuous in his actions and behavior, I'm sure he went, Jesus? Really? We see here he grabbed his clothes and he jumps into the water, maybe even a cannonball just to get there quick, and he starts swimming. All he heard was it's Jesus, and he's taking off, leaving these other guys to row the boat with the nets behind him. Real good friend there, right? Wasn't it Peter's idea to go fishing to begin with? When they get to the shore, they see that Jesus is there, and he's already built a fire on the shore, and somehow he's got fish already. We're not told how he gets it, but it's there, and he's got some bread, and he looks at him and he says, hey guys, why don't you bring some of your catch over? Why don't you bring some of your fish, and that way we can all eat. So they do that, and they sit around the fire, and as they sit there, these guys are still in this moment of kind of disbelief, doubt a little bit. They recognize Jesus. They know it's Him. But there's still something strange. I mean, this whole resurrection thing is still, are we sure about this? And they're just getting used to the idea of Jesus, who was very much dead, now being alive. But they don't say anything. They don't ask Him to prove Himself. They just kind of sit there and say, okay, it is Him. And they sit with Jesus and they have breakfast on the seashore, right there. After eating, Jesus looks at Peter. And he asks him a question that cuts Peter right to his heart. Peter, do you love me more than these? It's an interesting question. Peter, do you love me more than these? What does Jesus mean? Do you love me more than these? What is more than these? Well, if you read commentaries, there's all kinds of questions surrounding that. One of the questions is this. Is he talking about fishing? Is he asking Peter, hey, Peter, do you love me more than your career? Do you love me more than fishing? Maybe that's what Jesus was asking. Or maybe he was asking him about his relationship with the other disciples. Hey, Peter, do you love me more than you love these other disciples? Do you love me more than Thomas, and you love Thomas, and you love John, and you love the other guys? Maybe. Or maybe he's asking him something else. Maybe he's saying to him, Peter, do you love me more than these other guys love me? Now that's kind of an interesting question, isn't it? Is Jesus really asking him, Peter, if we line up your love for me and how much they love me, would we see yours weightier, heavier in the scale, more than theirs? Why would Jesus ask that, though? Because honestly, after studying this, I think that's exactly what Jesus was asking. I think he was saying, do you love me more than these guys love me? But why would he ask that? Why would Peter be singled out? Why wouldn't he say that to everybody? I mean, after all, hadn't all the disciples deserted him pretty much at his crucifixion? You bet. But I think in this moment, Peter knew exactly what Jesus was talking about. And it kind of, again, brings back even more emotion because Jesus was putting his finger on a very tender wound in Peter's heart. You see, previously, before Jesus was betrayed and before Jesus was arrested, Jesus was talking to the disciples and he says, hey, I want you guys to know what's about to happen. I'm going to be betrayed. I'm going to be killed. This is going to happen tonight. And where we find recorded in John's gospel, Peter had a reaction to this. And you know what Peter said at that moment? Jesus, I will stick by you. I will be with you regardless. And Peter says this. He says, if every one of these guys leaves you, if every one of them drop you and fail you, Jesus, I will never fail you. And in this moment when Jesus says to Peter, Peter, do you love me more than they love me? You better believe that in Peter's mind this comes up. I did say that. I did say that. I said, even if they failed you, God, I would never deny you. I would never leave you. Peter made that proclamation, and yet only hours later, he was standing alone by a charcoal fire that night, and he would deny Jesus not once, not twice, but three times. You realize how big Peter's failure is? It's one of the few stories we have that's recorded in all four Gospels. Everybody mentions it, and if you're Peter, you're going, thanks, guys. Really appreciate that. Thanks for, let's just post it on Facebook next time, would you? Peter must have thought, how could I have been so weak? He had images in his mind of this strength and Jesus being carried away and walking arm in arm with Jesus. And as Jesus stands before the religious leaders, Peter had in his mind, I'll be right there with you, Jesus. I'll stand there. And yet we don't find that at all. Peter couldn't even stand up to a servant girl. And he said three words that had haunted him ever since that night. Because when he was asked, aren't you one of Jesus' disciples? He uttered these three words, I am not. And I'm sure those words rolled in his mind. I am not. I am not. I am not. And Jesus, who had called Peter the rock, had crumbled into pieces in this denial. The freshness of that wound was still there. That wound was still open. The sting of shame was still so painful. And Jesus was bringing up the sensitive subject. I'm sure Peter, like many of us, wished it could have just been swept under the rug. I'm sure Peter wished that we could just forget about it or act like it didn't happen. But here, around another charcoal fire, Jesus looks at Peter and says, do you love me? Peter says, you know I love you. And Jesus says, feed my lambs. Jesus, for some reason, not letting this moment go, looks at Peter a second time and says to him again, he says, Peter, son of John, do you love me? And a second time, Peter replies, you know that I love you. And Jesus says, take care of my sheep. And then a third time, Jesus looks at Peter again and utters those same words. Peter, do you love me? And at this point, Peter was hurt. We read that he was hurt. This was a big deal. This was an emotional moment. You know, and some pastors want to look at this and they like to go, well, let's look at the Greek words. And in the Greek here, you find Jesus saying twice, do you agape me, which is a godly love? And Peter answers by saying, you know, Lord, I phileo you, which is a friendship love, a brotherly love. And then the third time Jesus says, do you phileo me? So he's reducing the standard. And Peter says, yes, you know, I do. That's garbage. I just want to tell you, nobody believes that's what's taking place here, because the agape and the phileo are actually interchangeable in other parts of Scripture. Peter's not hurt because Jesus says, do you like me like a brother the last time? Peter's hurt because Jesus says it a third time. I mean, just think about it. If you're married and your spouse says to you, do you love me? And you go, you know I love you. No, seriously, do you love me? You know I love you. If they ask it a third time, you're kind of going, what's going on? I've shown you my love. I'm here. Yes, I love you. It's beginning to hurt now, because why are you questioning my love? And that's exactly what was going on here. It was hurtful because Jesus asked him three times. And if there was a question before, there's no question about it now. Think about it. Three denials and three questions about his relationship with Jesus. And that third time ripped the scab right off the wound and exposed it. There is no question, Peter's thought, did. Three times that night I said to Jesus, or said to the people, I don't know him. I'm not one of his. And this was a very painful moment. But instead of running away in tears, instead of being belligerent with Jesus or defensive and going, you know, Jesus, I do. Peter says, Lord, you know all things. There's nothing you don't know. You know that I love you. Peter appeals to the character of Jesus, the all-knowingness of Jesus, and he says to him, Jesus, despite my utter and complete failure, you know me. You know what I've done, but you know me. You know my current guilt and my current shame over what I've done. And you know deep down, I really do love you. There's no doubt you know that. And then Jesus looks at him a third time and says, feed my sheep. Oh, and Peter, follow me. I don't know about you, but if I'm Peter, I do want to talk to these guys that are going to be writing these gospels a little bit later and ask them, hey, you guys think we can lay off the whole denial and struggle thing? It's really not that important. It's such a minor event in the history of Jesus. Let's put another miracle in there instead. There's many to pick from. Let's just find another one. I'm sure we can replace it. But what's interesting about this story is that when you begin to read it, scholars don't believe it was originally written at the same time the rest of the book of John was. They believe it was kind of an epilogue that John did write later in his life. In fact, if you read John chapter 20, there's a nice tidy bow at the end of that. And all these things were done so that people might believe. And you get to the end of John 20 and you think, oh, this is done. But evidently something happened later in John's life and he thought, you know what? There's another part of the story that people need to hear. And it's certainly written in the language that John used. It certainly seems like his hand. And so we find that later in his life, he penned these words, feeling like the story was incomplete, that there needed to be a little bit more said, especially about his friend Peter. I think one of the main reasons that this story is even here is because at some level, we can all identify with Peter. We can all identify. We may like to refer to our friend and say, oh yeah, they're the ones that fail, but we know when we're at home and the lights are off and we're laying in bed at night and there's no noise and we have nothing but us and God, we all know that there's some level of us that always relates to Peter and what he did. There's times where we have failed God. The sin we can't let go of trips us up again, that emotion that overwhelms us and controls us to where we're looking nothing like the character of Jesus. Our marriage that has fallen apart, that moment we should have talked to someone about Jesus and how much he's done for us and we let it pass without a peep. There's a lot of moments that we could plug in right here and say, these are the ways that we have failed God. We all identify with Peter because we all experience failure. We all can understand just how Peter felt in this moment. But I also think that as we look at this story, it highlights for us an incredible difference between how we normally respond to failure and how Jesus responds to failure. How do we respond to failure? You know what? It's a lot more fun to talk about other people's, right? It's a lot more fun to look at them. And so let's just start there. When other people around us fail, when they fail God or they fail us, how do we respond? What do we do? How do we treat them? These are just things off the top of my head. You know what? We begin with judgment and condemnation, don't we? When other people fail, we begin with judgment and condemnation. You know, in the church world, it doesn't seem like we can go a week without a pastor of some big church falling or failing in some way. And when we do, when we see those, we often look at them and we say, how could they do that? They're nothing but a hypocrite. And we begin to judge them. We begin to condemn them. Not in a loving, let's help restore them kind of way, but a, hey, here's the bus. Let me help you under it kind of way, right? We begin to shoot our own wounded when people fail. And so we begin with judgment and we look at them differently and we talk about them behind their backs as if we're praying for them or have a prayer concern, right? That's how we spiritualize it. I'll just pray for them. No, you're gossiping and you're condemning and judging people. But then we move on, though, don't we? We move to another step where we then just toss them aside. We write them off. Well, you have failed. You can be no good to me anymore. You're dead to me. Done. That's my personal preference, I think, unfortunately. We think they should just pack up and move to the desert and live alone for the rest of their lives. You know, even I think this about people. About 18 months ago, there was a very public megachurch pastor who was removed from his position. It wasn't because of sexual sin. He just had some issues with character. He was very belligerent to his staff, and he twisted his church structure in such a way that he had ultimate control and no accountability, and nobody could say anything to him. Well, this blows up. It goes off in the media, and eventually he's removed from his church. And the church splits off, and all these multi-site churches are now on their own and set up as their own individual churches. This year, Easter Sunday, this guy launched a new church. Can I tell you how many times I had a conversation with Ryan and I went, can you believe this? This guy cannot be starting another church. He's failed. He can't do this. And I had completely written this guy off. I thought, why? He can't. He hadn't paid for his sin enough, as if I'm the person that gets to determine when somebody's paid for their sin enough. But I judged, I condemned, and I tossed aside. And I think that's what we do when we encounter people who fail us. But what happens when we fail? You know, I think what we hope for is we hope that nobody treats us that way. We hope for mercy, but what we really hope for is that nobody notices. And so we do our best to hide it. We do everything we can to keep it out of sight because a fundamental belief that we have is that God is a strict disciplinarian just waiting for us to screw up so he can smack you. We believe that sometimes about God. In fact, we screw up and go, oh God, I'm so sorry. And that's the picture we have of God as opposed to the picture we probably should have of God as the father of the prodigal, ever watching for his children to return home so that he can walk, not walk, but run to them with arms wide open. But yet we look at God as the strict disciplinarian. And so when we hide it, we find also if we can't hide it, then we run from it. If we'd have been Peter, we'd have packed up the family and we'd been long gone. We remove ourselves from our family, we remove ourselves from friends, and we remove ourselves from our church. Because we assume that I failed and I can't be around people that don't fail. Because look at you good people, I can't imagine that any of you have ever failed. So I'll just run so you can't see my failure. Because we operate under this assumption that a failure is not allowed. Good Christians don't mess up, so I'll go somewhere they don't know about me or know about my mistakes. Because we're often judgmental and condemning of others when they fail, we believe that the same will happen to us when we fail. We've conditioned ourselves this way. And I think we see all these responses in this story. I'm sure that the other disciples sat around and talked about Peter when he wasn't around. I'm sure they had good conversation about, I still can't believe Peter. I would never have expected Peter. He was always so strong. Do you remember he actually told Jesus, I will stand with you. I will never leave you. I'm sure they did. And it wasn't just them that did it. This failure was public. If they'd have had Facebook, it'd have been all over it. If they'd have had Twitter, it'd have been tweeted about. Hashtag Peter fails. And I'm sure Peter walked away from this moment thinking, I will never be able to lead anything again. Peter's fishing trip that morning might have been about killing time, but more likely it was about him wanting to return to what he knew. I'm no good to Jesus now. My failure as a disciple is known. Maybe I can just spend the rest of my life fishing. But what's interesting to me is how we see our normal response to failure is so different than what we find in Jesus in his response to Peter's failure. You see, where we try to run away from it and we try to hide it, what do we find Jesus doing? We see Jesus brings it to the surface. He doesn't let us ignore it. He doesn't let us pretend it's not there. Why? Is it because he's just a mean, sadistic person that enjoys causing us pain? Absolutely not. He brings the pain into the light because he knows that it's only when it's brought to the surface can we find healing. The more we try to stuff it down, the more we try to ignore it, the more we try to pretend it's not there, the less likely we are to ever find hope and healing from it. And Jesus, when he comes in, he shines the light into the deepest, darkest recesses of our souls, and he says, I see that failure. Now let's talk about it. And up to the surface it comes. Why? Because when it's brought to the surface, we can find healing. Only when we come face to face with our own depravity can we find salvation. Only when we stare at our failure in the face can we find restoration. And then, and only then, can we begin to move forward. You see, when we refuse to deal with our failures, we leave ourselves open to self-doubt and shame and confusion about our purpose in life. These experiences left unresolved, they're paralyzing, they're depressing, and they're as destructive as any feeling in the world. But Jesus goes right to where the pain is. And this is the most gracious thing that he can do. Get that. This is the most gracious thing that he can do. Go to where the pain is. I mean, think about it for a moment. Why did Jesus ask Peter the question three times? Did he do it for himself? No. He is all-knowing. He already knew that Peter loved him. He asked Peter three times so that Peter had the chance to publicly confess his love for Jesus. Three times. So that Peter had the opportunity to cover every devastating denial that he had made on that fateful night. Jesus knows there's going to be times we fail. But by bringing it to the surface, he shows us that he has seen our failures before they ever happened. And it was for those failures that he went to the cross. It's for those failures that he died and offers you and me forgiveness and restoration. Because he is the great restorer of those who want restoration. We also see in Jesus something truly amazing. What Jesus does to Peter in this moment is not a, oh, Peter, come here. Let me give you a hug. It's okay. I know, let it out. He doesn't do that. Do you know what he does? He looks at Peter and he says, okay, you love me? Fantastic. Let's get to work. Peter, I've still got a plan for you. Peter, my plan is not done with you. And we find that Jesus says to Peter, I'm bringing you a renewed mission, a fresh challenge, an invitation to be a part of God's great work in this world. When people fail us, what do? I said, write them off, right? And if we do choose to use them again, if we do choose to allow them to be part of what's going on, what do? We micromanage. We give them the meaningless task that any child could do, and we say, okay, now go do this. Don't screw it up again. And yet, for some reason, Jesus looks at Peter, and he says, you know what? I'm not done with you yet. I'm restoring you completely, and you will go out into the world, and you'll be an incredible, magnificent part of my kingdom work in the world. A huge task, and Jesus says, I'm not done with you. This failure will not be who you are. My plan and my purpose for you is not complete. Peter, take care of my people and follow me. Why does Jesus do this? I think it's because of the greatest thing we see about Jesus in this story. Are you ready? Catch this. Jesus doesn't define you by your failure. He never defines you by your failure. Jesus understands that failure may be inevitable, but it doesn't have to be fatal. You see, here's the thing. We think failure takes us completely out of the game. It creates guilt, it creates shame, and it removes us completely away from God. And you know what? That's exactly where Satan wants us to be. And I am sure that Peter wanted that. Just leave me alone. I know I screwed up. I know I failed. And the greatest temptation is for us to allow our failure to just completely derail us and take us off track, off the purpose that God has called us to, and to take us further away from God, to isolate us. And Jesus says, no, I'm not going to let that happen. I see your failure, and you know what? I love you anyway. I don't define you by your failure. Jesus never sees us as the failures we see ourselves to be. Jesus sees you as the person you can be and you should be in his kingdom. And that failure is taken completely away. He says, your failure, I died for that. You screwed up, so what? Repent, come back to me, and get involved again. And what's amazing to me is as you look at Peter, you find that Jesus says to him two things. The process of restoration that Jesus uses is two things. It's very simple. He says first, do you love me? The process of restoration begins with love. Now, we screw this up because the second thing restoration has is service, serving God. And we're so goofy and screwed up, we flip those. And you can't flip those around. You can't move those backwards. You can't say that my first way of restoration is service. You know what happens then? You get in this mindset that, oh, I need to go do something as my penance because I've screwed up so bad. I have to go work hard so that God will love me more. No, the restoration begins when we love Jesus. And what's amazing is that Jesus doesn't ask Peter, do you love me? Do you love me? Because he questions Peter's love. Peter was questioning his own love for Jesus. Peter was the one questioning, and Jesus is going, Peter, I'm going to put my finger right here on where it hurts the most. Peter, I know you're questioning your love for me, but I know that the entire reason you're questioning reveals your love for me. Let's take that love and let's bring it to the surface. Peter, I don't define you by your failure. I define you by your love and your relationship with me. And I define you by the work that I have done on the cross. You see, love and service is what heals the hurt of failures of the past and keeps us on track with our relationship with God and the mission of God in the world. See, I like to ask questions, goofy questions sometimes about Scripture, and I think, what if? You ever do that? Read a story in the Bible and think, what if? What if this moment had never happened for Peter? What if Peter had never had this encounter? He'd seen Jesus alive, and yeah, he saw it, and everything's great. What if this had not happened? You know, this was an unpleasant moment, a difficult moment, and it seems harsh and unkind for Jesus to bring up painful memories. But what if it didn't happen? I want to make some guesses here just on typical human behavior. What I think would happen is Peter would have never been able to overcome his guilt. And this guilt would have eaten Peter up. This shame would have consumed his life from the inside out. That feeling of failure would have defined him the rest of his life. He would have felt worthless and incompetent, living a life totally haunted by his past failures. He would have stopped moving forward in faith. He would have never become the pillar of the early church that he became. He'd have returned to what was comfortable and was well known. He'd have dropped his friends, the other disciples. He'd have stopped Jesus. And he'd gone back and lived out his days as a sad, depressed, self-defeated fisherman. And that would have been the end of Peter's story. But praise God, Peter's story doesn't end there. And listen to me, neither does your story. Your story doesn't end at your failure. The real danger is not in failing, but it's in the potential of the failure taking us completely off track and away from God. Theologian J.I. Packer writes this. He says, failure can be a learning experience. That's one of the reasons our master, in his providential ordering of things, does allow his servants again and again to fail. Think about that. God allows us to fail. Why? Because it's in the failure that we find progress. Our failure doesn't have to be fatal. In fact, it can lead to an amazing transformation. What happened to Peter from this moment on? He did become a pillar in the early church. He became the guy that went to the Gentiles, Cornelius, in Acts chapter 10. He became a missionary. He wrote part of the New Testament. What I'd love to tell you is, you know, and Peter never failed again. Go read Acts. He screwed up again. Paul had to call him out on it. Quit showing favoritism, acting like you don't like the Gentiles when they're around. Stop it, Peter. And you know what we find? Again, healing and restoration. Are you struggling with your own failure? Is Jesus asking you this morning, do you love me? Maybe it's not because he's questioning your love. Maybe it's because in the moment of your failure, you're questioning your own love. And just by asking that question, Jesus is beginning that process of healing and restoration in your own life. Do you know why I love this story so much? Because I need this story. I need this story. Pastors aren't supposed to have failures, right? We'd be here till tonight if I started listing them all. What I love about this story is I see the heart of a father, the heart of a savior, who reaches into my failure and he looks at me and he says, Brent, yeah, you screwed up. But I love you, and I know you love me. So shake yourself off, dust yourself off, and let's get back to work, because I'm not done with you yet. And I just want you to know this morning, if you're struggling with failure in your own life, I think that's the message Jesus has for you today. Do you love me? I know you do. Now shake the dust off, and let's get back to work, because I'm not done with you yet.